Now it's flipped down low right side and out of the net and tucking it home. Matt Duchene, what beautiful mitts there. The Predators take a 1-0 lead 57 seconds into the game. Yossi carries in for Nashville. Got the puck back, got a shot, deflected off the glove hand of the goaltender. Now a shot tipped in front from the right point. Tipped in to give the Predators back a one-goal lead, 2-1 at 15:32. Sweeps it back around Forsberg. It comes toward Yarncroak. Gergensen's there. Gergensen's flattened against the boards. Forsberg drops back in the slot with Johansson down low. Here's Forsberg getting the feed. Johansson, the rebound. He scores. Ryan Johansson shoveled in a rebound, and that ties the game back up. It's 3-all at 16:07. Time running down on Nashville, 18 seconds. Here it's to the blue line, and they're saying no offside. Wow, Predators got a break there, but they can't make anything of it. Comes back to the Nashville zone. Yossi with the pass, comes over wide for Forsberg. 6 seconds and a shot goes wide. Rebound toward Yossi, tipped out. And the Buffalo Sabres are going to win a hard-fought game here tonight over the Nashville Predators.
Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome to the show, Friday edition, a huge football Friday. Also a basketball Friday, also a hockey Friday. We've got a hell of a weekend in Nashville sports. Alongside me today, Steve Lehman. What is your official title, Steve? I always let you do the work here on this one. Give everybody your official title.
I mean, sports anchor, News Channel 5.
Of course.
I was hoping Steve Lehman would just cut it, though.
That's all you need?
just introduce me to that. We'll be fine.
Okay, Steve Lehman joining us here. That's all the introduction I think you need for me. So I that's all I need to hear, Steve Lehman. Marquise Munson, just Munson. I don't know if you know, Steve. You have not worked with us on this show yet.
He only needs last name introduction.
Yes, and he is a different name in different settings. He is Munson when he produces the show. Let me see if I can get this right, because I always screw it up.
Yeah, it's like Cher and Prince.
He is Marquise when he's on a date.
Marquise with a symbol by the eye.
Yeah, he's got a symbol.
Fancy French symbol.
And when he's out with Chase and all the guys, Nashville Knights having a good time living it up, it's just Keese.
Yeah.
So those are his names.
I like it.
It's alter egos, man.
I like it.
They all change throughout the day.
I just change diapers and work. That's all. So I'm just lame old Braden. That's all it is. So,
you're just Braden gone.
Steve hanging out with us today. Always a pleasure to have you, man. Love doing work with you. And so going to have some fun today. Huge weekend. Preds lose last night 4-3. And one of the things, there's a lot to talk about, of course, with the game in particular. But I wanted to step back. Before we get into how huge this weekend is for Nashville across all sports platforms, but the one thing, there's times in sports, Steve, where you watch a game and you see a team perform and you don't really think there's something wrong. Like I watch a team and I don't really think something's broken or this was an utter failure or this part of the game was trash. Like we've seen sometimes with this team where like the power play wasn't working or the penalty kill was terrible or the goaltending was terrible or the defense was bad or something else was really good. It just felt like Buffalo, like the Preds played a pretty decent game, and Buffalo played a pretty decent game, and they were just better. And I can't tell if that's something you should take a positive and feel good about that, because you played against a pretty good team, second place in their division, in their building. They're 10-3-3 at home. Or you should be worried that you played a good game and just weren't good enough. I don't know which one it is.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you there. I felt the same way last night. As I was thinking about the game, is what's the big picture thing that I'm supposed to take away from this 4-3 loss here
in December?
And I think particularly from the game last night, I don't know if there is one, because that just happens sometimes. You play a good team on the road, you can play well, they might play a little bit better, or they get a bounce and you lose. So I don't think it's last night's performance or last night's result so much that you have to sit here today and think, oh man, what's wrong with the Predators? The problem is where they are in the standings
right
after last night's loss. And you look at them, whatever they are, 30 games into the season now or something like that, basically a third of the way through. Why are they sitting in 11th place? Mm-hmm. That's the thing that I think you have to wonder. There have been a few too many nights that are like last night where it wasn't that they played awful, but they didn't play well enough to get a point or didn't play well enough to win.
Tampa, Vegas. Just recently.
Lost in some shootouts in there, and that's the thing. So, I mean, they've played really well here over the last 6 or 7 games for the most part in terms of getting points, but that's how bad they were for that stretch where even where they're now almost getting a point every time out, they're still in 11th place, and that's the thing I think you need to worry about.
Yeah, and that's sort of how I felt last night on Twitter at the end of the game. I'm just like, man, Preds played a pretty good game. They just weren't good enough, and 11th place is what it is. You are what you are. Like, I know it's December, and teams go on runs, and, you know, the Stanley Cup champion last year was in last place, fired its coach, and had a rookie goaltender in January,
sure.
Which, of course, is the normal formula for winning a championship in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
Even David Poile acknowledges that's not, you know, we joked with him at the beginning of the season, like, hey, David, is this the new formula that you're going? And he's like, no, we're not going that direction. So there's nothing really to overreact to in this situation, but you're right. It's been so many of those nights where you go, oh, they played a pretty decent game. I don't think there was any one area where I thought they failed miserably or something. Hey, that's where they need to correct the problem. No, it was a pretty good game. I mean, Matt Duchene's goal was a spectacular individual effort. Jack Eichel's goal, number two, was just a spectacular individual effort. And sometimes you just tip your cap to a great player. And on the road against a really good, you know, they're second place in the division, very good at home. All these things we talked about yesterday. You're just not good enough. And sometimes that can give you confidence and say, hey, that's not a bad loss. We played well. We're going to get the points out of that game the next time we play that one. But it's happened too many times where you didn't get the points. And just not being good enough eventually means you're not going to make the playoffs. So no reason to overreact right now. But those are things, and that's a trend that they're going to have to fix.
Well, and they're way beyond moral victories about going into a place like Buffalo and almost picking up a point, almost getting it to overtime. That's not what the Predators are interested in. But I think the thing I'm struggling to grasp is why they're in the position they're in. Because even last night, it wasn't like they gave up a ton of high-quality chances, but the chances they gave up ended up in the net.
Yeah,
and that is a problem that the Predators have to figure out how to solve. And some of it is defense. Some of it is when they do overextend themselves and a chance comes, it's too good of a chance. It's too high danger.
Well, and Saros saved two of those, you know, on Tuesday night.
Yeah, yeah.
Where a penalty shot and a breakaway, like if one of those goes in, maybe we're thinking about a different outcome.
Sure. Well, and that was the other part I was going to get to is, as much as you love Pekka, and I think UC Saros has played well at times, bottom line is they're not getting enough key saves right now. It may not be the overall statistics you're looking at, but it's those saves you're talking about. Tuesday's a perfect example. There were a couple times where they broke down and gave up breakaways, or you get a penalty shot thrown in there.
Even if it was a cheap call, whatever.
And guess what? UC Saros made a couple huge saves, and you win a game because of that. Yep. The Predators need these goaltenders, both of them, to step up and make one more save a night right now to bail them out when something happens. Because it's hockey. You're on skates. Things are going to happen at times where you're going to give up a chance.
I like the on skates angle of this. Like, hey, listen, you're not running. This is a this is a complicated sport.
Exactly. You're going to give up some chances. You need your goaltender to come up big occasionally for you, and I think so far this year it hasn't happened enough.
Yeah, I tend to agree. So back on the ice tomorrow night, weird start time, pregame at 4:30, puck drop at 5:30 at Bridgestone, hosting the Dallas Stars, a team that they are now not only chasing in the standings, they were back of the Stars, they were the next team back. Now Minnesota has jumped them in the standings, and so that makes them 11th place in the Western Conference, and it puts all the more importance on Saturday, which brings us to this entire weekend and how big this is. And obviously the Titans are going to dominate 75% of the headlines this weekend with a huge game against Houston coming into Nissan Stadium, the code blue, all the big stuff, all the injury issues, Tannehill playing the best football of his entire career, all these things we've discussed ad nauseum all week. It's a monstrosity of a game. But it's not just the football. I mean, this hockey game on Saturday against Dallas is a really important game in the division. And more importantly, Memphis, Tennessee basketball, man, in December has turned into appointment viewing for Tennesseans. And I know you're a big basketball guy and you come from a basketball school with a basketball background, and I know you love this stuff. And I think it's amazing to see what's happened in the mid-state over the last, I don't know what you'd say, like maybe 24 to 36 months, maybe 4 years, where it's just, it feels like, you know, Kermit Davis's run with against Middle. And you know, Rick Bird's always been doing it, and now Casey Alexander's doing it he goes from Lipscomb to Belmont, and all the John Morant is now in the state, and he kind of played in this area regionally of the country. Tennessee had their run last year. Penny's getting every headline nationally now at Memphis. college basketball is like surging right now in the Mid-State area, and Tennessee Memphis. I can't remember the last time I was excited about an appointment non-conference game in December.
Yeah,
and tomorrow is going to be crazy at Thompson Bowling Arena.
Yeah, no, it's going to be fun. There's a lot of factors that come into it. One, football hasn't been as good as it probably should have been around here, so people had to distract themselves a little bit with basketball because
That's
it was
true.
Better. I think basketball in the state is just getting better. I think high school players are better today than they were 10 years ago and things like that, population
exactly.
and growth
yeah.
and all those sort of things. So all of that factors in to some degree, but you've got some pretty good coaches here who've done a really good job with their teams, as you pointed out. And in particular with this game, Braden, you've got two schools that have really established themselves. I mean, I think Tennessee is one of the best programs in the SEC right now, year
sure.
in and year out. Memphis looks like a team with tons of talent that could do real damage this season. And then you go back to the thing a couple – I guess it was just last year with Penny talking about
sure.
Rick Barnes. And
bring it, man.
Now you're playing again. I mean, that's fun.
We had Seth Greenberg on yesterday, and he's a guy who, you know, national guy who cares about the national stories with the national perspective. And you know, he's not a local guy who's going to cover deep in the weeds. But even he's like, dude, I can't wait for this game. And mm-hmm. if people around the country who are college basketball fans are getting into this, imagine how the people of this state could sink their teeth into this game if it was happening every single year. So
uh-huh.
it needs,
yeah.
I really think, maybe every other year, but I really do believe, I know that, and we talked about it yesterday, there's not as much, you know, pull there for Tennessee. They don't need it as much as maybe Memphis does, although Memphis is quickly, from a brand standpoint, and the way Penny's recruiting, he's quickly moving past a lot of programs in this area. But the state, it's good for the state. I'm not sure Rick Barnes sees necessarily all the value of having to play that non-conference game every year.
Yeah.
He's got a great schedule in his conference to get a good resume. Penny kind of needs it a little bit more. Maybe there's some bad blood and he doesn't want to schedule him. I mean, who knows? But I think, you know, if people could put everything aside, put ego aside, it would be a great matchup that if we could schedule it 1 year in Memphis, 1 year in Tennessee, in Knoxville, and 1 year in Nashville and rotate it
every
3 years, it would be awesome.
And my thing is, why not? Do it for you. Do it for me. Do it for Munson back there.
Do it for Munson.
I mean, we need this game as a state. And here, maybe you don't like Penny. Maybe you don't think you need the game if you're Tennessee, and you're probably right. But that's the great thing about basketball. This isn't college football where you're worried about playing that one marquee game and what happens if I lose it? Can I ever get back on track?
Yeah.
You play one game like that, it's great for everybody involved. And if you lose it, it's December. There's a lot yeah. of basketball to be played to make up ground from that.
And if Memphis is 10th, 12th, 13th, 15th, whatever in the nation, and you lose a close game to Memphis,
no one cares.
The committee's going to look at that almost positively.
Yeah.
And be like, oh, no, you're just as good as them.
And if you win it, it's great, and the Christmas ham tastes better.
Exactly. I always love a good Christmas ham. I'm more of a prime rib guy at Christmas. Do you,
okay.
do you go ham?
I go whatever's on the plate.
Yeah.
I'm not really particular.
Just whatever mama's got going.
Well, and my family moves around where we're at every year, yeah. so depending on where we're at, the menu's different.
We do my mom cooks prime rib, Yorkshire pudding.
Ooh.
And we do the whole deal. It's like the only bougie meal of the year that we have. Otherwise, give me all the blue collar stuff. I know you and I are both big food guys. And,
yeah.
And you can
you're making me hungry right now.
Yeah.
It's 6:13 in the morning.
People do not know what Yorkshire pudding is in the South, I think.
It's so good.
You know what I'm talking about.
Oh,
right?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. All right. So we got a huge stuff. Listen, we'll talk with Josh Ward coming up, so we'll get a little bit more into Tennessee Vols recruiting on football as signing day coming up next week, but also this big matchup with Memphis mostly is going to be our focus coming up in a few minutes. We've got a huge weekend of football, so we'll get our initial thoughts and get this ball rolling. We've got a ton of Titans to talk today, as of course they've got one of the biggest games in recent franchise history with the Texans coming up on Sunday. I think that's fair. Also, our $100 Moments Peace Salon and Day Spa gift card. We're going to give that away. We'll give you our question for that.
A little bit happier
well.
Today.
Yeah, we're going to go happier today. We're going to go happier.
It's been sad the last couple days.
We heard some savage stories about people cheating
straight
yesterday
in my
on each other. It was really bad. So we'll do
Yikes.
That when we come back. Steve Lehman hanging out in for Derek Mason. My name is Braden Gall. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.
See, now I feel like I'm with Keese.
Keese definitely doesn't listen.
No. See, I could see Keese doing karaoke with like Ricky and Chase, because I've seen you do karaoke with Whitney Houston. So I could see you doing karaoke
like, to this.
Because
like you're not supposed to do karaoke to things that are just like cool. Like I wouldn't go up there doing Outkast because I love Outkast so much.
Wait.
Like you got to do something quirky. Like
so you can't do karaoke with something cool?
Well, it's not something cool, but just like, you know.
Is that what everybody does, like Chattahoochee Alan Jackson, yes. like Billy Joel?
Like, I feel like Piano Man. I feel like karaoke's for quirkiness. Like,
all right,
you know, like, I got to show my vocal cords, my range. Oh. So that's why I sing.
Oh, you've got range?
Yeah.
Oh, I got range.
I've seen your jump shot, dude. You don't have range. Steve Lehman joining us
I
here,
got
by
post-game,
the way.
Game, though.
That's true. You do. You play. Steve, he plays a very violent game of basketball.
That doesn't shock me at all.
It's a lot of flailing, which I like because I do a lot of flailing when I play basketball. I can get to the rack. I have no idea what's going to happen when I get there, but I can get there. Marquise can get there. He just might commit a few fouls on the way.
Marquise is like the opposite of high school basketball where you get like a I guess maybe he's the same. You get like a 6'1 post guy. You know, you just you pound it inside and you're like
he is the
our
opposite.
Center's 6'1.
He's the opposite of YMCA guy who's 48 and has like that perfect jump shot. Like he's a little slow.
But he wants no part of the contact.
He doesn't want any contact, calls a lot of fouls, but he's got a good jump shot and he knows the game. He uses the ball fake and he has a great pass. He's a good passer. Marquise is the opposite of that guy. Whatever that
I'm basically
is.
The YMCA version of Charles Oakley. That's pretty much what
it
is.
As someone who grew up a diehard Knicks fan, respect. I like that. I can handle that. Steve Lehman hanging out here with Braden Gall. We will do on Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We've got a $100 gift card to a Moments Peace Salon and Day Spa. You've got a tweet at 102.5_MD. We'll give you that question here coming up in just a few minutes. But I guess I just want to start with the Titans. We're going to get into a lot of things specifically to the game as it pertains to the pass rush and the special teams and a lot of interesting things, the injury report, all that good stuff. But just sort of in general, the stakes, obviously we know what they are. Can you put into perspective? I've had a tough time putting into perspective how big this game is because even under Malik Malarkey and last year with Vrabel, we've had pretty huge games in December where playoff spots were sort of hanging in the balance.
Mm-hmm.
But this one, for some reason, because the offense is exciting, because the quarterback has changed, can you put into perspective how big this is relative to the last 5-10 years of Titans football? Is this the biggest home game in December we've seen in quite some time?
I've been trying to think about that. I don't know how you say it's bigger, honestly, than either of the Week 17 games from the past 2 years because those were legit win and you're in, lose and the season is over games right. for
They're
this
playoff
team.
Games.
We've had a few of those moments around here. So I don't know if you can say that. But what I do think is different about this one, Braden, is a couple years ago when they played that Jacksonville game in Week 17, I don't think anybody truly believed that team was a threat in the playoffs. And so, yes, they won the Jacksonville game and they got in. And yes, they somehow came back in the second half and beat Kansas City. But even then, going to New England, I don't think anybody thought they had a chance or that they could do real damage in the playoffs. Last year, when they got to Week 17, they were so beat up.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody gave them a chance in that game. But even if they somehow managed to scrap and claw and fight their way to get in, nobody gave them a chance beyond that in the playoffs.
And this team feels different. People don't remember. That was a one-score game with like 6 minutes to go against the Colts with Blaine Gabbert as the quarterback. Like, right. They were close enough in the game.
It was a heck of an effort. But this team feels different to me.
I think you're right. Number one, we've talked about that, and you're dead right. There is more upside with this team in the postseason because of the offense. There's no question about that. So I think that's part of it. The other thing is those were for wild cards. Those were Week 17 battles for wild cards.
Sure.
And while they are win or go home Week 17 playoff games, this because of the upside, this feels different because it's a division championship hanging in the balance. If you win this game, you're talking about a home playoff game, not having to go on the road and play the Chiefs or go on the road and maybe even rematch with the Texans in back-to-back weeks, right? Week 17 and week one of
the
playoffs.
If they play 3 times in 4 weeks.
I mean, talk about
there's
going to
be nothing left.
Right. Like, they're all just going to kill each other. So I do think that I struggle to put, like, I know we always in the moment spend a lot of time going, like, this was the greatest of that, or this was the most amazing of this, or the most dramatic of that. We're always very prisoner of the moment with all this stuff. But I do think that even the playoff year a couple years ago where they had to win and get in last year, like you said, I don't think anybody thought they were going to win that game. 2 years before that, with Marcus breaking his leg against Jacksonville, coming back with Houston, it was sort of the end of the season already. Like, we sort of knew that the year was done when Marcus got hurt. You know, I went to the game when the Ravens came to town in 08 in the playoffs, and that was certainly a huge game with a home game. It was 11 years ago. Like, that's a different era of Titans football. So
right.
I do think this is as big a game as you can have at this stage of a season for this organization in quite some time. And I don't think, you know, we've asked the fans to show up to watch, at times, maybe not the most electric offense, but they were winning. They were competitive. They could beat good teams. The difference is now you don't really have that excuse. This is the most efficient offense we've ever seen from a Tennessee Titans organization over this 7-8 game stretch. There's really not any more excuses. The weather's not supposed to be bad, so you can't complain to me about the weather. This is your first place in the division, so you can't tell me this game doesn't mean anything. And the offense is as exciting as it's ever been. People are obsessed and in love with Derrick Henry. And if he goes out and does something special this week and the following 2 weeks with a bum leg and carries this team to a division title, I said it yesterday, this is like legendary status that you tell your kids about 10 years from now. Mm-hmm. Remember that time Derrick Henry with a bum leg carried us to a division title? That's we're in the moment now. Enjoy it now while you can.
Well, Tannehill, I'm sorry, is going to be the same way.
It's Tannehill, right? Isn't that what it is?
Is it?
I see the Tannehill. Munson, I need your help, Munson. It's because you're the young hip guy here.
I am.
Marquise, actually, or Keese, I don't know. Tannehill, right? Because I hear the Tannehill thing, and I'm like, that's not what I see on social media.
It's got to be Trill.
It's Tannehill. Especially when Stillman yesterday was talking about it. He's like, I hate Tannehill. And I was like, dude, I think it's Tannehill.
No, it's Trill.
Yeah.
Who? Tannehill.
Remember, like, it was Kenny Trill, not Kenny Thrill.
Yeah.
Remember for Texas A&M when he had that great 7-game stretch to the season?
Right.
And then, of course, it fell off the face of the earth.
Yeah, Kenny Trill.
Kenny Trill.
I mean,
which is actually a Houston reference, by the way. Trill is a word that comes from.
And that's where Tannehill went to school. He went to A&M.
Exactly. So it's Tannehill.
I think it's Tannehill.
Who says Thrill?
Which also.
I was just using it from the fact that he walks in the game and now they're thrilling to watch. Like, I wasn't trying to be hip necessarily. I was just throwing that out there because that's what he's done to the offense. But that's the point.
Right.
Is that Derrick Henry's doing something special. And you're right. If he gets them to the playoffs and he continues to do this December what he did last December and it leads to a playoff berth, people are going to talk about that forever around here. And it's probably going to mean he wins the rushing title and they're going to be in the playoffs and maybe a threat there. But same thing for Ryan Tannehill. What he's doing right now for this offense, we haven't seen with the Titans quarterback since Steve McNair. You're going back that far to get to a guy who does anything close to this. And
or Marcus year two. Like, the only year that he did that was year
but
two.
But even that
even then was a
wasn't
little bit more
close to this.
Conservative.
The numbers that he's putting up, Lamar Jackson is having a historic-type year for the Ravens. If Ryan Tannehill played the entire season, he would be in the exact same conversation as that for the MVP of the league. That's how well he's played in these 7 weeks. You throw that with Henry, there's just no reason if you're a fan out there. If you've been waiting for the reason, Titans, you got to win for me to show up.
Okay, check.
Well, they've started winning. You've got to get to the playoffs for me to show up. They did that a couple years ago. They're in the mix
they're
right
in
now.
First place.
You've got to be more exciting for me to win. They're as exciting as anybody in football right now.
Yep.
So all of those things are off the table. If you're not ready to buy in and show up this weekend, I don't know what it's going to take.
Yeah, I agree. And Monday morning we came in here and we were like, all right, what number do you want? What record do you want us to talk about? Like, Derrick Henry set like 4 different records for the franchise last weekend. 9.36 yards per play is the greatest in Titans history last week. So literally the most efficient offensive performance in the history of the franchise.
Yep.
The longest touchdown pass in the history of the Titans franchise. Like, literally everything you could argue about what an offense should look like, they did it against Oakland. Now, the defense had some problems in the first half, and I think that there are some concerns if Will Fuller is fully healthy. With him and Stills and the burners, along with DeAndre Hopkins and Deshaun Watson and your injured secondary, that doesn't feel like a good recipe, and that's going to be a concern, and Dean Pease is going to have to scheme something up to stop it. But this is the NFL, and if you want to win divisions, you got to beat good teams.
Yep.
And you know, having them come to town, I think, and saving Houston for the final couple of weeks, obviously not their call, but just makes the whole thing feel really, really cool. So we got a ton of Titans stuff to get to this morning on the show. Steve Lehman in for Derek Mason. My name's Braden Gall. We'll give away that gift card at the end of the show. We'll get your question when we come back. And Josh Ward going to join us to put some perspective on what Knoxville is feeling right now with Memphis coming to town. A basketball question in December. Ahead of recruiting and bowl games. A basketball question for Josh Ward. WNML in Knoxville. When we come back right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. You hear that music, it means Josh Ward from WNML is joining us from the 865. Steve Lehman, Braden Gall here on Morning Drive. And Josh, I cannot believe that I am asking you in December a basketball question ahead of recruiting, bowl games, college football, playoff games. I'm asking you a basketball question before anything else, Josh, because Memphis and Tennessee are playing on Saturday. tomorrow, and it's as big a game as I can remember in December in the state of Tennessee.
And this is why they should keep playing basketball every year, which I know has been a big topic this week on both sides, both in Knoxville and Memphis and in between. What will happen with this series after they play next year in Nashville, actually, which I think will be exciting. It takes the interest level to a much higher level. If you look at Tennessee's schedule in December or just throughout the season in non-conference play, because Tennessee has Kansas in January as well in that Big 12 SEC Challenge, Tennessee's playing a bunch of good teams, good college basketball programs from Florida State and VCU, Washington earlier in the season to Cincinnati coming up. Wisconsin is a really good program from the Big Ten. None of those games come close to comparing to the excitement level Tennessee fans have for this Memphis game. And we're not going to see a 100% Memphis because of injury issues and then James Wiseman's absence with the NCAA suspension. But the Penny Hardaway, Rick Barnes stuff, coaches don't always have to like each other. It's okay if they don't, and that would appear to be the case here. But fans on both sides have great rooting interest, and that's great for college basketball, especially at this time of year. I can't wait to see what happens at Thompson Bowling this weekend.
It feels a little bit, and Brayden, you'll appreciate this for me, it feels a little bit like 1980s Big Ten basketball. You've got these like coaches that have sort of big personas at their individual schools battling back and forth. They don't necessarily like each other. Josh, what do you make of the rhetoric from the coaches? How much of this is a story that we like to talk about because it's a great thing to talk about, and how much is it that Rick Barnes and Penny Hardaway actually don't really like each other all that much?
I would say that they either don't like each other or they don't like to continue to be asked about the other at this point, especially on Rick Barnes' side. I thought that was pretty clear when he was meeting with the media locally a couple of days ago, just kind of ready to move on from that. And maybe that's part of the thought in not wanting to play in the future. You don't want to deal with this part of it within the game. But I would just say we'll make it a small part of it. You know the question's going to be asked. You can provide the answers where you don't want to get into it and then move on. But Rick Barnes has said that he doesn't think the series will be extended past next season, at least in the immediate future. And I think that's disappointing. But both coaches, I do think, are genuine when they say that, hey, the other's doing a good job. Penny Hardaway's done a nice job early on at Memphis, and we'll see how the season plays out. And obviously, Rick Barnes' track record speaks for itself, and Penny Hardaway recognizes that. And both can be good teams. Both teams are ranked in the top 20. Both teams will have a really good chance to be in the NCAA tournament. And that takes the stakes to a higher level because now getting a win against the other can mean mean something for your resume at the end of the year, and that's good for the rivalry. Plus, we've just seen the history there. Former players on both sides are saying keep playing this game, and when players and fans, I think, equally get up for what the matchup's going to be, that's, again, something that's good for college basketball. And Rick Barnes is also correct. There are a bunch of good programs in the state. It's not just Tennessee and Memphis. He's right about that. But Tennessee and Memphis, I think, creates about as much excitement as you're going to find in the state of Tennessee.
Real quickly, Josh Ward, WNML here. We'll move on to recruiting and the bowl game. But real quickly, just the matchup itself, I know they're not 100%, but from what I've seen from Tennessee, I still have concerns about their front court, the size. The offense clearly does not run through the front court like it did last year. And athleticism, Florida State sort of just out-athleted them to some degree at times. That is my concern against teams like Memphis and Kansas and later on Kentucky.
I think you're right there. There's a freshman, Olivia Kumwa, who continues to get challenged by Rick Barnes, one, because he's needed in the front court, also because he is a talented player. He was kind of an under-the-radar prospect, but he's long, he's a good athlete, he's really smart. And if he plays at a higher level, that can help take some pressure off somebody like John Fulkerson, who is just going to have to kind of help lead the way in the front court. How Lamonte Turner shoots is going to be a big deal, and can they take care of the basketball? I think game in, game out, the keys are not going to be too difficult to figure out. Can Tennessee play really good defense against Memphis this weekend? If that's the case, then I think Tennessee's defense and the home court advantage, I think, gives the Vols an advantage going into the game.
Josh Words, WNML in Knoxville, joining us here on 102.5 The Game. Josh, to football recruiting, Jeremy Pruitt, Tennessee, get the big commitment from Amari Thomas, the big lineman from Briarcrest Christian out of Memphis the other day. Then they get Jabari Small, the running back, his teammate from there. What do you think about those two commitments and what Jeremy Pruitt's putting together as a whole as we move towards the early signing date next week?
Amari Thomas was kind of a must-get for Tennessee in this class because the Vols have a huge need on the defensive line when you look moving forward. Next year, Tennessee brings back just about everybody on the defensive line. but then just about everybody will leave after that, at least a high percentage. So Tennessee will need more players in this class. They're still trying with somebody like Jay Hardy in Chattanooga. Octavius Oxendine is a player that Tennessee is going after. Tyler Barron locally. Tennessee needs more guys up front, and it would have been a really bad miss to not get Amari Thomas, talented player, big kid, 300 pounds. I mean, he's a big guy up front. So Tennessee will be able to count on him maybe immediately, but certainly down the line. He could play on the offensive line as well, which always you have needs there. Tennessee, again, needs to get more guys, big guys, and that's the big focus to close out either the early signing period or certainly everything in February, depending on who decides to sign this week. And I think Jeremy Pruitt likes overall what he's done with this class. They missed on some of the bigger names they were going after in August and September because of the slow start. But Amari told me this week that he was really watching to see how things unfolded, and he was at the Georgia game and saw that Tennessee was maybe getting better. Then he was at the South Carolina game, and he saw that Tennessee was getting better, and it made a big difference. So the turnaround in the second half of the season has maybe in some ways helped save the 2020 class.
Josh, the bowl game, they'll play Indiana in the Tax Slater Gator Bowl down there. They have the time slot off to themselves on January 2nd. What do you make of how they ended up there? I go on your show on Wednesdays, and you asked me this question, and I said, well, I'd much rather have them in Nashville, but that's totally for biased and selfish reasons. What actually is the best thing for Tennessee football? To have that, you know, November, January 2nd, 7 p.m. primetime slot all to themselves and be in the state of Florida where they want to recruit? Or do you think Tennessee fans would have rather have come to Nashville?
I think the slot on ESPN broadcast and being in primetime by yourself, I don't think that hurts. There is no negative to that, so it can be a positive for Tennessee. From a recruiting standpoint, I don't know how many prospects are thinking January 2nd, on a Thursday night, I've got to get to the Gator Bowl and see Tennessee, Indiana. Doesn't mean they won't be watching. I don't think it's as high of a priority as it will be for Tennessee fans. Fans wanting to watch on TV, by the way, for Tennessee, it actually can help because 4 o'clock on a Monday afternoon, maybe you're off on the holiday, maybe you're working, though, so it'll be easier for fans to watch the game. I have said this week that fans need to kind of remove themselves from what the historical thought has been with these bowl games. We took another call this week that said, I didn't want to go to the Music City Bowl. It's just a 6-6 bowl. And I said, it's not that anymore. It's a much higher level bowl. It's more about shuffling teams around and finding the right spots than which bowl from Gator to Music City to Belk, which one is really better than the other. I think the Music City Bowl is a fine bowl. Tennessee was an 8-4 team that went there just 3 years ago. Yeah. The LSU-Notre Dame game gets brought up a lot. So I thought there were some advantages to the Music City Bowl for Tennessee, and I think within the athletic department you had some back and forth on which one was better, Gator Bowl or Music City Bowl, and then I think it comes down to your personal preference.
Josh, always a pleasure, my friend. Love talking to you, dude. Enjoy the weekend. I know Thompson Bowl is going to be crazy on Saturday, man. It's going to be great.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Always fun to talk about it, and look forward to talking to you guys next week.
All right, thanks, Josh.
Thanks, Josh.
Josh Ward, WNML, and I did think how the bowl process and the selection process played out was pretty fascinating.
Agreed.
It's not going to be a hotel thing here in Nashville, right, if it's a Tennessee volunteer game. But to me, when you talk about juice, Louisville, Tennessee in Nashville, to me has more juice than, and again, I know I'm biased. I live here. I'm an alumni. I have a 100% chance of going to the game if it's Music City Bowl.
Sure.
I have a 0% chance of going to the game if it's in Florida.
Yeah.
But like Josh said, the recruiting thing maybe is a little overblown. It was weird how it happened, but I actually think Tennessee had the right with the head-to-head over Mississippi State and with Kentucky. They had a better record. I think Tennessee had the right to do what they wanted to do.
Yeah, no question.
I just don't know if it's the right thing for Tennessee. I think you could argue both ways. I think a Louisville regional rivalry in a city that you can dominate and own that's going to be painted orange for 5 days, I think there's a lot of advantage to be said.
I'm with you selfishly. It would have been great if this game was here. I have two questions about this and how it played out that I want to ask you probably after the break here.
You can ask me now.
Ask you now.
You can ask
okay.
me now. We're gonna push this break back a little bit.
Okay. Here. Perfect. One, why do you think the athletic department, because it's pretty clear, the athletic department was on board with the Music City Bowl. And then all of a sudden at the last second, they were like, no, actually we prefer. And you're right. They should have been able to make the call out of this. And they did.
Kentucky fans got all, you know, upset about it, but they didn't have the right.
Right. They didn't win. So
I think it was the boosters.
I get all that.
Frankly.
It was the boosters who wanted to go to Florida. Okay. Yeah. So that's fine. That's what they want to do. But the other thing is there's that story out there of all the Tennessee fans who ended up buying tickets as it trickled out, right, and the sources were saying that they're going to the Music City Bowl, and now they're caught with these tickets that not as many people want, and it's hard to resell, and your team's going to Florida.
I think it was only a couple of hours, though, right? Like, it felt like it
was only a
couple.
Sure, but people act quickly when they hear that. Do we think Tennessee fan out there is actually more excited about the Gator Bowl versus, you know, you heard Josh say some people view the Music City Bowl as a 6-6 or a 7-5 bowl type of thing. Which I don't view it that way anymore at all.
They're this close to being a college football playoff contender. Like, a couple more years and a renovated stadium, they're going to be pitching themselves for a college football playoff game.
Absolutely. Do you think the majority of Tennessee fans are like, sweet, Gator Bowl, I feel great about this, or I'm kind of disappointed it isn't Nashville?
What's ironic about Indiana as the opponent to me is that I think they're actually a better football team than people realize.
Oh, much better.
But I don't think it gets anybody excited. I think for some reason Louisville, even though I think Tennessee would like watching Kentucky dominate Louisville at the end of the year, I think Tennessee would push Louisville around. And I think they would win the game pretty handily. So I actually think Louisville's a quote lesser opponent, but I think there's more juice. There's more overlap with people living in Tennessee and Kentucky and Louisville.
There's more Louisville alums here than there are Indiana alums.
There's just a bigger connection to it. So I think it would have been a better and more interesting matchup. I don't think people get excited for Indiana football. Even though, again, ironically, they're actually a pretty good team, and actually, you know, Tom Allen's done a great job with that team. It's going to be tougher out than Tennessee fans think. I think they're just going to roll down there like they did with Northwestern and Iowa and Nebraska, ironically, here, and win the game. So it'll be very interesting to see what takes place.
The storyline's going to be great because you have two programs that have both been down. I mean, Tennessee more recently down, Indiana just historically
down. They're basketball
down.
Schools now.
But they've both – yeah, exactly. But they've both had great – turnaround seasons for the program. Here they are, and here's an opportunity in January to make your case moving forward.
We'll talk a little Tennessee Memphis and give you our gift card giveaway question at 1025_MD when we return right here on Morning Drive. Steve Laban, Braden Gall. This is ESPN 1025 The Game. Morning Drive, ESPN 1025 The Game. Man, I'm busy morning this morning here around the studio. What's going on back there, Munson? Steve Lehman here hanging out, Braden Gall in for Derek Mason. And before I get your thoughts on Memphis and Tennessee basketball, because we got to get to the Titans, obviously a huge game with the Texans coming up, so we'll talk a lot about that next hour. Teron Davenport going to join us as well. We are giving away a $100 gift card to a Moments Peace Salon and Day Spa. And we ask a question every day on the show this week and next week, and whoever has the best answer, or in some cases the worst answer, we've been giving away those gift cards. Steve, we asked the questions so far, and Munson, you can tell me if I'm correct me if I'm wrong here. The questions were yesterday was if you got
was holiday breakup, and
if you got broken up with on the holidays, and we got
that could have gone off the rails,
dude. Yeah, we got stories. People were just savage, One guy said he was gone. He went to a Christmas party or like a family gathering with his girlfriend he'd been dating for a year, and there was another guy there that proposed to her. Like, so she brought both boyfriends to the family Christmas party, and I'm like,
and
who
his boyfriend
does that
proposed, might add, she told the guy that this was her quote unquote cousin.
Cousin, yeah. Like, people are savage.
Wow.
Like,
did she say yes?
I don't know about that, actually. Yeah, that was Mancard Matt, so tweet us again and let us know what actually happened. I think he basically said the breakup happened after that. And
yeah, I mean.
The other one, one yesterday was a guy tore his ACL and his fiance called off the wedding like the day before Christmas, and he was in the hospital, and so his family had to move him out of the house because he had a torn ACL and was in the hospital, so he couldn't get, you know, he couldn't. You know, when you break up and you live together, you have to move out. And and he couldn't actually physically move out of the house. It's like, God, these people are ruthless.
No, that's brutal.
I never had anything like that. I mean, don't get me wrong. I was emotionally unavailable for a few years. I get it. But, like, come on. This is crazy stuff. We had a couple other ones. Worst Christmas gift as an adult. And the one who won that one on Monday was a woman had just given birth to her third child. And the mother-in-law gave her a Thighmaster. So we were like, You deserve to win. Your mother, your mother-in-law just doesn't like you.
No.
So we've had some really we've had some fun ones, and then there's obviously the old tell us why your spouse deserves you know, to be pampered, and then that's where you get some really sad ones where you're like, this person's going through this trouble, and it just reminds you of how difficult people can have it sometimes, and you know you hope you can give somebody a little peace and pampering there.
This is a great time of year, but there are certainly people out there who are going through some things right now, and it only amplifies what you're going through because it is such it should be such a joyous time of the year with your family and friends and all that.
And I think being a more empathetic collection of humans would be a smart move for everybody in this country. The question today will be worst holiday travel experience. I've got Kevin McAllister in my head, getting on the wrong plane or getting left behind. Excuse me. I guess that was Home Alone 2 where he got on the wrong plane. You know, you've got Christmas Vacation. Everybody's traveling this time of year. So I want to know your worst Christmas traveling experience. The winner will award that winner later on in the show around 9:30, 9:45. So tweet us. You got to be on the Twitters, not the text line. The text line's very popular. It's the hottest thing in Nashville these days. At 615-737-1025. But you've got to text, or you've got to, screwed it up. You've got to tweet us at 1025 underscore MD. At 1025 underscore MD. Tweet us your worst holiday travel experience. The winner will announce it at the end of the show. We'll get a $100 gift card to Moments Peace Salon and Day Spa.
You have one?
Flying with a 6-month-old and a 20-month-old.
Okay.
Just anywhere. But it was around the Christmas holidays.
Okay.
For Christmas.
But there's no like in-depth story on this?
No, it's just it's just miserable to travel with a 6-month-old and a 20-month-old. It's just tough.
So when I was like 13 or something like that, my family, I had an aunt and uncle that lived in southern Oklahoma, and they got their hands on this like condo unit vacation rental type of thing, and they were like, it's in Texas. Let's all do, as opposed to everybody going to Illinois, we can do this. We've got a week or 5 days or something. And they said,
when I think of holiday destinations, I think of Illinois and Texas.
Well, right. But they were like, instead of us going up there this year, everybody come down here to Texas. Right. Like, it'll be warmer and all that. And so I'm sitting here. I mean, I'm 13. I don't know a whole lot. I'm thinking like, not necessarily beach because I do know my geography, but I'm thinking like, legit warm weather. Like, we're going, it's probably going to be like 75 and sunny and all that. So we show up and it's like 47 and drizzling the entire time.
Like the Packers Steelers Super Bowl in Dallas?
Yes. The place is not that big. So now the entire family is like stuck in this thing. And then on the way home, it snowed the entire way, and like the roads from basically central Missouri to Champaign, Illinois, where I grew up, were basically shut down. It more than doubled the car ride home, and it was grandpa, grandma, my mom, my brother, and I all in like a van. It was unbelievable.
So it should have been like a, I don't know, like a 12-hour drive turned into like a 20-hour drive?
It was like 23 hours. Yeah.
Oh, my God. There's nothing I have very few like pet peeves that like set me off, but interstate travel is like one of them.
I'm with you.
Like, I am a get in the car. We're not stopping to go to the bathroom. We're not stopping to get food. Quit crying back there, girls. We're going and we're going to get to our destination.
That trip is actually why I fly so much, because I am much more ready to just get on a plane and let somebody else get me there than I am drive myself.
Well, we'll see if the Texans offense can fly on Sunday with all those injuries.
I see what you did there.
I think there is a solution to that, however. Which pass rush will win on Sunday, I think, could be the deciding factor. We will discuss as we have a full hour of Titans playing for you guys coming up next. Steve Lehman in for Derek Mason. My name is Braden Gall. This is Morning Drive ESPN 102.5 The Game.